Hi, and welcome to the special edition of the Macro Show, because it's time for a macro thesis update. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. You know, many people have said that due to the pandemic, that the macro thesis is busted, that it's now a foregone conclusion that we're going to see inflation due to the marriage of fiscal and monetary stimulus. But that really isn't the case at all. And while the pandemic did absolutely extend the timeline, there's no question it threw a whole wrench in the middle of the endgame. It didn't change the outcome. In fact, when you understand how the pandemic has caused the Fed into this mode of an overuse of quantitative easing, it's actually increased the probability that the endgame of the macro thesis, at least this first major leg, is even better than I thought. Let me explain, because when you understand what QE is doing to the global monetary system, it starts to make perfect sense of how the end game plays out. And as many of you know, it's the end game that I'm looking for. Because when the end game plays out, where bond prices peak, risk assets are going to be dirt cheap, where they're likely to see another bear market or a financial crisis, perhaps even both, which would be really bad, but really opportunistic for the macro thesis to play out. Let's try to understand this. So the quantitative easing, when we look at what it does, we have to step back and then focus on the dollar. It's a global reserve currency. It greases a wheel of global trade. You can't go anywhere in the world at some level without using the dollar to conduct global trade. It is the most important currency in the market. And even though a lot of people don't think it has much value today, oh, it certainly does. And we have to think of the dollar kind of like the blood in our body. When our blood pressure is too high, well, that's bad. When our blood pressure is too low, that's also bad. But when it's just right, which it generally is most of the time for most people, it's really good. And the same is true for the dollar. When there's too many dollars in the global economy, what do we get? We get inflation. When there's too few dollars in the global economy, we get deflation. And when it's just right, what do we get? Synchronized global growth, global trade running, everything is smooth. And so that's what's really important to understand about quantitative easing, because it traps dollars into this global, into the commercial banking system, into this dollar prison. Because the federal government neither has the ability to create or destroy dollars. All it can do is borrow them and spend them. Federal Reserve also has no ability to create or destroy dollars. It is also a lender. But the Fed has an interesting power between its use of its monetary tools to either force dollars into the banking system or remove them from the banking system. And quantitative easing, despite its tag name of easing, isn't easing at all. In fact, it tightens financial conditions, because what does the Fed need? It needs the dollar to be just right. Now, is the dollar too high right now? No, not at all. In fact, arguably, we could say the dollar is too weak. And so the Fed needs to get the dollar to be a bit stronger, and it also needs to get interest rates down. Now, why does that make sense? Because how do dollars get from the United States out into the global economy? Well, it's real simple. When American businesses and consumers borrow money, where dollars are created, and they spend them abroad into the global economy. Now, how do you get people to do that? You get to do it with a weaker dollar? No, because then they're incentivized to spend their money domestically. So you want a stronger dollar so those foreign produced goods and services are cheaper. Well, what about interest rates? Are people incentivized to borrow when rates are high or low? Well, simple, when they're low. So if you have a dollar that is of appropriate strength, stronger than it is now, and rates that are low where consumers will go out and borrow, then you can get dollars out of the U.S. into the global economy and get the global trade cycle back up and running where it needs to be. So that's what's interesting about quantitative easing, because it's trapping dollars into the global, or into the U.S. commercial banking system. Now, the way it's doing that is by locking them down through these reserve assets, as we've discussed in previous shows. And the pandemic did something interesting that I could not have predicted years ago when I built out this leg. And a lot of people don't realize this leg of my macro thesis is 3 to 5 years in length. So it is absolutely still in play. Arguably, it could be extended a little bit due to the effects of the pandemic, but it's still well within its time horizon to see now this finally play out. And we're getting really close to seeing that. Because something that happened as part of the pandemic that, again, we couldn't have predicted. Did I believe the Fed would end up doing quantitative easing as part of the end game of this first leg? Absolutely. That was absolutely key to the plan. What I didn't expect is things to be so bad that the government would inject fiscal stimulus into the game by giving it directly to consumers or taxpayers. And the way they got the money wasn't through the popular misconception of printing money, they borrowed it. And when we borrow money, when the US government borrows money, well, they borrow quite a bit of it from foreign sources. So we had money from outside the US system come into the US system. And because it didn't all get spent, which we kind of could have predicted, and we know very much now, is some of that money gets put in deposits, some of those deposits inside the commercial banking system, where the Fed comes along and gobbles them up into these reserve assets, and then they become trapped in between a small number of banks, limiting their mobility. And we can see that evidence in the velocity of money. And here you can see that it's on the Fred database, a velocity of M2, and it's gone way down. Now it's bounced a little bit, and there is this perception that as the economy reopens, that the velocity of money will increase. Well, that's not likely to happen. In fact, we can go back to 2009, and we can see where quantitative easing started in the first quarter. And then as the economy started to bottom out, yeah, there was a little increase in the velocity of money, but what happened? It continued to fall, and even after QE stopped in 2014, it continued to fall, gets a little boost here, and then rolls over and goes down. So we know the quantitative easing is trapping dollars in the system, and it doesn't even matter if the economy reopens. It's still going to continue to do it because the money multiplier, which is the money stock divided by the monetary base with a small adjustment to make the ratio math work out, what we're seeing is the rate at which the Fed is doing QE is more proportional to the growth in the money supply. Now, it's possible in April, this may tick up a little bit. We'll have that data next week, so we'll see. Otherwise, we can expect this to continue to fall. Why is it going to fall in May? Because taxes were due. People had to pay taxes. That's a drain. And we also know that the stimulus package ended. There was only about 15% left to go in May. And this has been driven the money supply has been driven by fiscal stimulus. And even then, the Fed is overriding it with their purchases through the quantitative easing program. So we know this is going to go lower. And when the money multiplier goes lower, well, it leads to tighter financial conditions. In fact, what we expect then in our example of, say, is the dollar too weak or strong compared to how our blood works? Well, it's simple. When there are too few dollars because they keep getting trapped in the financial system more and more and more, well, what happens? Well, we see lower consumer prices. That is one effect. We will also see lower interest rates because that's what the goal of the program is. And then you're going to see lower asset prices too. And if you stop and think about that, it's simply because there's not enough money to prop asset prices up. You know, what causes real estate prices to go up? Do they just magically go up on their own? They don't. It requires someone to pay more than what the last person paid. Same is true with stocks. Same is true with crypto. Bonds don't have to work that way. Bonds actually reprice themselves based on the future value of the dollar, which we're going to talk about in the macro show on tomorrow. And so what we see is interest rates go down, bond prices go up, asset prices come down, and it's all due to the fact the Fed is tightening up financial conditions by constricting dollars into the commercial banking system. Now, this is interesting because before this view was just on a domestic level, but now due to the fact that we pulled all these dollars out of the global economy and we're tightening them down, it gets more interesting because there's naturally in a debt-based economy, a shortage of money against the amount of debt. So if we try to pay off all the debt, there isn't enough money. But when you have a highly overdebted global economy and you take dollars outside of the foreign markets where there's a substantial amount of dollar denominated debt and you trap it in the commercial banking system, the eventuality is it's going to lead to a collapse in the global economy. It's not due to any other factor other than too much debt and too much leverage underneath that debt. So this is what's really interesting is you start to see now the end game play out. Now, when we go and look at where prices are at, when bond prices, the story gets more interesting because we see a bottom now. We're seeing a shift start to build after all this heavy speculative selling. You might remember we've seen the largest selling event in roughly 34 and a half to 35 years the U.S. Treasury bond market's been around. More people have sold or shorted treasuries now than ever. But are we seeing a bottom? Well, it starts to look like one. And let's take a look at a chart real quick because there's something I want to show you. So this is TLT, and let's zoom back a couple of years, and you can see this is what everyone's considering the bond route, that this whole game is over. There's no possibility now that rates are going to go up, but I want to focus on what's going on here. And I want to share with you something called Wyckoff. And this is the Wyckoff method, which I find really interesting. It's probably one of the most interesting things you can learn about to determine market tops or bottoms. And I encourage you, if you've not heard of Wyckoff, just study. You know, there's websites, books, there's all tons of resources out there on his method. And this is an accumulation schematic. There are multiple ones, in fact, but we'll just focus on this one here. And what it shows you is price coming down. And it has an SC. What is an SC? Well, it's a selling climax, the point at which widening spread and selling pressures usually climaxes in heavy or panicky selling. Now, how would you know if there's heavy or panicky selling? Not through the volume. By the public being absorbed by larger professional interest at or near a bottom. So it just has to be somewhere at or near a bottom. Well, let's go back to TLT and see if we can find that. And let's zoom in here to the, well, let's just leave it right here on the 2-year. See this big spike in volume? Oh, there's your selling climax. So you can tell by these 2 days, big volume spikes, that there was a selling climax in here. Now, it's not unusual for it to lead to an increase in price following that. In fact, Wyckoff mentions that as it moves up to this automatic rally, which occurs because intense selling pressures is greatly diminished. A wave of buying easily pushes prices up, this further fueled by short covering. The high of this rally will help define the upper boundaries of a trend line. So let's go back and say, okay, where's our upper trend line? Way up here, but it looks to be somewhere closer to this $140 to $141 price range. Let's continue on with Wyckoff because, well, it gets even more interesting than there. Well, what you'll see is prices move around in a range, and then there'll be kind of this kind of sell down with a retest some point later, until you get to the spring. So let's just see if this occurred. Now, keep in mind as you look at this, nothing is perfect. You're never gonna see an exact textbook example of something, but sure enough, you saw a sell down, a bottom was formed, perhaps too deep of a bottom, so a bear trap, prices kind of rallied up, they reconfirmed. Now this Cayenne line is right around 2.4% on the 30 year. In fact, I'll show you up here. There it is right here. Now it's in purple. Let's go back to TLT. So price rallies back up to what is called resistance. If we go back and look at this Wyckoff chart, you kind of see it gets right up into this resistance line, this range. And now let's go back. And what happened? Then all of a sudden, it looked like it was going to break out, didn't do it. It came a second time, didn't do it. And then bam, 4 days, heavy selling right down to the zone of support. And this is where things get interesting. So let's go back and see what we can learn, because now we're at the spring. So where is the spring? Or a shakeout? Well, they occur late within a trend line and allow the dominant players to make a definitive test of available supply. Now, what does that mean? They're trying to figure out if all the sellers are done selling. So they're saying, look, we know where the sellers want. They want to break that 2.4% level, so we'll give them a chance to see if they can do it. And this happens before a markup campaign unfolds. A spring takes price below the low of the trend line and then reverses to close. I don't think TR is the right word. Let's see, let me get the right trading range. There we go. So at the bottom of the trading range, this action allows large interest to mislead the public about the future trend direction, right? So price goes down, interest rates go up. Everyone's like, okay, this is the breakout higher in yield. And what did they do? They would come in and short it, and it uses the big players to acquire additional shares at a bargain price. A terminal shakeout at the end of accumulation TR is like a spring on steroids. Shakeouts may also occur once a price advance has started, with a rapid downward movement intended to induce retail traders and investors in long position to sell their shares to large operators. Now, did that happen? Well, it did. In fact, it happened right here. if you go back and look a couple weeks ago, it absolutely happened. It went right below the trend line. It started to shake people out. Volume popped up and then done. All right, now let's continue on and see what happens next. However, springs and terminal shakeouts are not required in elements. Accumulation schematic one depicts a spring, while the one does not. Now we also get this secondary test. You see up here, it says in diagram, there's a test that starts to happen. Well, what is that? Well, in which price revisits the area of the SC, which is the selling climax, the supply demand balance at these levels. If a bottom is to be confirmed, volume and price spread should be significantly diminished as the market approaches support in the area of the selling climax. It is common to have multiple secondary tests after a climax. Now, this is interesting because one of the things we learn about here is the volume starts to drop off. And did it? Well, let's go back and look. And yeah, the volume did start to drop off. And we got a second retest of the selling climax. Now, is that unusual? No, it can happen. In fact, you can have as many of these as necessary to flush out all of the people who want to sell. And then what happens? Price starts to rise, and we can come back, and you'll see it'll make kind of a jagged move higher until it gets back up to that resistance line where it eventually breaks out. Now, there's some other interesting things about TLT here that we can look at because we can overlay the volume profile, and we can look here over the last 6 months, you can see there's the most shares on TLT have been trading around 139.56. There is your level of resistance. So we know a bottom is forming because it's forming below this level of resistance. And as it comes up and breaks through there and then breaks through the 140 to 141 range, then all of a sudden this bottom is now validated and away price goes. So what you're seeing here is an accumulation pattern. Now, what's even more interesting to me is on a bigger scale, we can look at treasury yields. So we know now that TLT is nearing a breakout, which would also confirm that treasury yields are getting closer to moving lower. But let's go back and look at what goes on with treasury yields. Because when you see these kind of double tops that are spread out, you typically get a big move lower. Now let's go back here. You see back here in 2001, a top, a double top, and in the middle, there was a move down in yield, kind of like now. And what happened? That after that double top, new all-time lows in yields. Here's another double top in yields, new all-time lows, double top, new all-time lows. Whoops, didn't get it there, but then it broke down below. Here's a double top with a move down in yields, new all-time lows. Small double top, new all-time lows. And here you have a double top in the middle. This was the one that got rejected only to lead to significantly lower yields. And what do you have now? Well, let's zoom in and take a look. And you can see a double top at 2.4. Of course, these little arrows you see, these are rate cuts. Those are real significant areas where it's hard for sellers to break through. So you have a double top, a move lower, suggesting that once this holds and moves lower, yields are going to make a new all-time low. And that gets really interesting because it tells you financial conditions are going to massively tighten. And it starts to make sense because the belief right now is the global economy is going to recover, led by the U.S. And the businesses are going to have to raise their prices to consumers and their wages because people are on these unemployment benefits still. And that's competitive against employers. But what everyone's missing is without all this fiscal stimulus and the Fed actively trapping dollars in the commercial banking system, financial conditions are going to tighten a lot. And that's what QE does. So what does that mean for the dollar? Well, let's take a look. Because the dollar is kind of telling us maybe in a bigger picture, if we go to the trade-weighted dollar symbol DXY, is this perhaps a large Wyckoff bottom here? Well, you look, it came down, price, remember, price comes down, selling climax, has a little bit of a bounce, runs up back to maybe a prior level where it tries to break out, gets hard sold all the way down, finds support at 90, previous level before, gets a little run up, right? Tries to break out, comes down in back into support very quickly, and perhaps the next move from the dollar is the spring higher. And certainly, if all this happens, it will be very interesting because it tells you how things are going to play out. Now, if we look at perhaps risk assets, well, we see some interesting things there. Let's look at China, for example, because I think this is where you're going to see this dollar shortage start to manifest. And here's symbol FXI, and let's zoom out a little bit further on this, and you see these tops. And these tops are pretty consistent with things going down a lot. And if we zoom in, you can see very clearly a left shoulder head, right shoulder top forming and a neckline right here around 45 to suggest that the Chinese stocks are gonna head lower. And well, if we went and overlaid emerging market stocks, which by the way, have quite a bit of China stocks in there, well, you can see that that signals emerging markets are also going to head lower. And so all of a sudden you then go, well, what about the US? Is there something there? Well, the S&P 500 is making maybe perhaps a small top. Let's zoom in. Yeah, we'll leave it at the two-year mark. How about the tech stocks on the NASDAQ? Yeah, it's looking toppish. How about small caps? That is pretty consistently with the top. Remember, small caps do lead large caps lower. And we'll probably see some other things like gold miners eventually reverse. And generally, they've been a lead of liquidity. But there's some reasons perhaps this recent run, which I will share at some point, when I can do that. But in the meantime, perhaps Bitcoin has taken over that role of liquidity lead. So it's interesting to see this play out. And so the macro thesis is still alive and well, and the end game is almost here. Of course, it'll be bad for lots of other people, but that's okay. That was always the plan. And it wasn't to brag or to say, hey, you know, we got this right. It's just to play out, because that's what investing is. It's looking at the long term, playing out the odds, riding it out to the end, and then having this opportunity to buy risk assets at a price that may never be this low again in my lifetime or yours. And having generational buying opportunities, because what's going to happen after this? Massive amounts of floods of liquidity are going to come in. Feds are going to do things. The government may force banks to lend. We don't know. Maybe the dollar milkshake theory will come into play. There's some all kinds of possibilities that will play after this. But there's still room after that to see a big move higher in inflation. Because when you get a big deflationary crash, the CPI goes negative. Well, it's pretty easy to get inflation from a negative number. Anyways, again, I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Thanks for being fans of the show. I thought this macro thesis update was a bit timely. We're about to see bonds do something the market's not expecting. I'll see you soon. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as education and information only. It does not provide investment or other advice. Serial is not to be construed as recommendation or solicitation by selling security, financial instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity, opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advising or Steve Van Meter Financial.